इति ब्रुवाणं संस्तूयः मुनीनां दीर्घसात्रिणां वृद्धा कुलपतिसुताम् आवृता शौनको ब्रवीत्।
On hearing Suta Goswami speak thus, Shaunaka Muni, who was the elderly learned leader of all the rishis, engaged in that prolonged sacrificial ceremony, congratulated Suta Goswami by addressing him as follows. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. In a meeting of learned men, when there are congratulations or addresses for the speaker, the qualifications of the congratulator should be as follows. He must be the leader of the house and an elderly man. He must be vastly learned also. Sri Shaunaka Rishi had all these qualifications. And thus he stood up to congratulate Sri Suta Goswami when he expressed his desire to present Srimad Bhagavatam exactly as he had heard it from Shukadev Goswami and also realized it personally. Personal realization does not mean that one should, out of vanity, attempt to show one's own learning by trying to surpass the previous acharya. He must have full confidence in the previous acharya, and at the same time, he must realize the subject matter so nicely that he can present the matter for the particular circumstances in a suitable manner. The original purpose of the text must be maintained. No obscure meaning should be screwed out of it. Yet it should be presented in an interesting manner for the understanding of the audience. This is called realization. The leader of the assembly, Shaunaka, could estimate the value of the speaker, Sri Suta Goswami, simply by his uttering yathaditham and yathamati. And therefore, he was very glad to congratulate him in ecstasy. No learned man should be willing to hear a person who does not represent the original acharya. So the speaker and the audience were bona fide in this meeting where Bhagavatam was being recited for the second time. That should be the standard of recitation of Bhagavatam so that the real purpose can be served without difficulty. Unless this situation is created, Bhagavatam recitation for extraneous purposes is useless labor, both for the speaker and for the audience. Swami speak thus. Shaunaka Muni, who was the elderly learned leader of all the rishis, engaged in that prolonged sacrificial ceremony, congratulated Suta Goswami by addressing him as follows. transcendental knowledge to be properly presented. These very important instructions must be carefully understood. The atmosphere of the surroundings where such recitation is to take place must be proper. Here we find the second reading of Srimad Bhagavatam, or recitation. The atmosphere of proper etiquette amongst Vaishnavas is herein being established. I need something to keep this page down.
Without
the proper observance of Vaishnava etiquette, even the highest knowledge, the greatest scholarship, will not have the proper effect. Because when we are discussing Krishna conscious subject matter, it is the presence of Krishna, the advent of Krishna into that sound vibration that gives it potency, that transforms the hearts and purifies the minds of both the speaker and the hearer. It is not something material. In a material university, if the teacher simply knows his subject and speaks it, and the student is willing to listen, then some learning takes place. But when we discuss Bhagavad philosophy, we are not simply concerned with learning. We are concerned with purification and realization. And that purification and realization can only take place when Krishna personally, by his own sweet will, appears within that transcendental sound. Many people, they go to various study groups, and they learn Bhagavad philosophy very nicely. But the purification and realization is not necessarily there. And I have known people who had the entire Srimad Bhagavatam completely memorized, and yet they could not convince another person to change their lives. Whereas we have children in this Hare Krishna movement who hardly know a single sloka, but they could convince people to change their lives. Because although Krishna is personally present within every syllable of Srimad Bhagavatam, his presence is manifested when the recitation is taking place according to the principles that we are reading of here today. Where Vaishnava etiquette is properly being followed. Pleasure is given to all of those devotees who are concerned. And by such pleasure, Krishna himself is satisfied and agrees to manifest himself through the vibration which is being spoken. And what is the etiquette that is required? The first is that the speaker must be a humble servant of the previous acharyas. He should not dare think that he knows better or has deeper realizations than the previous acharyas. He should consider himself to simply be the humble servant, the instrument in the hands of Guru and the previous acharyas. This is an internal form of etiquette. That before speaking, we should receive the permission of the senior Vaishnavas. We should not think that we have the right to speak without their blessings. If such senior Vaishnavas are present, we should receive their blessings. And if they are not physically present, within our heart, within our mind, and within our prayers, we should not begin before begging them for their permission and their blessings. And what is the permission and blessing that we beg from them? That now, with your permission, let me, by your mercy, repeat your words. Repeat your transcendental message for their benefit and for your pleasure. There are many reciters of Srimad Bhagavatam and other Vedic literatures, and they may be beautiful musicians, and they may speak very eloquently and with great, great scholarship. They may even speak in such a way that they enthrall and captivate people's minds and hearts. But for the message of Krishna and for the power of Krishna to be present, such a person must humble himself and repeat the words of the previous acharyas in a proper disciplic succession. Otherwise, it is more or less just a pious form of entertainment. The real substance will not be imparted. Because bhakto sime sakachi si rahasyam yetadutamam evam parampara praptam idam rajashayavatu. Unless one is really a devotee, what Krishna will not appear from his mouth. Like a bullet that is blank, a blank bullet sounds exactly like a real bullet, but the difference is there is no substance. A real bullet has the power to penetrate your heart. A blank bullet cannot penetrate, but it sounds just the same. In the same way, unless one is humble and surrendered to the previous acharyas, proper acharyas, in disciplic line, Whatever he speaks may sound exactly like Bhagavatam philosophy or Gita philosophy. But Krishna will not penetrate your heart through what they speak. Even if such a speaker can make you cry tears by the very romantic and intensive way in which he speaks, still, Krishna is not truly manifesting himself through such a person, unless he has the blessings of the previous acharyas. And such a devotee, he must be speaking not for his own profit, not for his own reputation, but he must be speaking to please the previous acharyas and to benefit all those living beings who have come to hear him. If such a devotee in the mood of the servant of the servant of the servant speaks what he has heard, then his words have divine transcendental potency, unlimited potency, to change people's lives, to create revolution in a person's heart. Because through his words, Krishna appears. And the hearer must, first of all, be anxious to hear, eager to hear, not hearing simply as a matter of formality. Of course, at the beginning, we may not have any real enthusiasm to hear Srimad Bhagavatam. But we must, as a matter of regulative principle, to carry out the order of the spiritual master, we must continue to hear, regardless, every single day. It is a regulative principle. But gradually, by hearing Bhagavat, in this mood, we become eager to hear, anxious to hear. We should pray for that eagerness. And when we really want to hear the Bhagavatam, and we are willing to offer all respect to the person who is speaking, then Krishna, who is within our heart as the Paramatma, seeing that we are properly respecting his devotee, we are anxious to hear from him, we are willing to perform tapasya and make sacrifices to offer this respect and to hear this message, when Krishna sees that we have that consciousness, then he opens our ears and opens our hearts in such a way that the message can truly enter and change our lives. And realization takes place. So this is so very important. When the speaker of the Srimad Bhagavatam sits on an elevated seat, he should never think that this seat is mine. Because according to Bhagavatam philosophy, nothing is mine. The seat called the Vyasasan That seat belongs to Vedavyas and no one else. And as a viceroy on his behalf, that great avatar of Vishnu, we are permitted to sit there only on the condition that we absolutely, without compromise, repeat his words without adulteration or concoction. That was Shukadeva Goswami's qualification, and that is the only qualification that can be accepted. We are given respect when we recite Srimad Bhagavatam, not because of who we are, but because of who we represent and what we represent. All of the previous acharyas and the divine sound vibration of the Bhagavat itself. And we should know that when we offer respect to such a person, this is the principle that is being followed. Just as Srila Prabhupada explained, that when you offer your obeisances to a sannyasi, you are not simply offering obeisances to a person, but you are offering obeisances to what that person represents. He represents the disciplic succession of renunciation and detachment, which means the vow of complete surrender of our body, mind, words, and life to the service of the Lord without any diversion. That is what the tridanda represents. That is what the cloth of a sannyasi represents. And this is what we are offering our obeisances to, this most sacred and holy principle. And similarly, when we come to offer our respects to whoever is reciting Bhagavatam according to the principles we have mentioned, we should know that we are hearing and respecting the divine teachings of all the previous acharyas. This is the beauty and glory of disciplic succession, or parampara, which completely differs from any particular personality who simply speaks his own realizations on his own behalf. We do not accept knowledge from such persons. However scholarly and however expert they may be in their presentation. Because this is the Vedic system. We were speaking that one should never think that anything is mine. The elevated seat of the reciter of the Bhagavatam does not belong to him, it belongs to Krishna. One's disciples, one should never think that these disciples are mine. That is an illusion, and that is an offense. Sometimes one may speak like that, just as a matter of communication, with the limitations that words have in this world. But within one's mind and heart, nothing is mine. Everything we do is only on behalf of our spiritual master. Everything we have, we are offering to our spiritual master. So how could anything be yours if you are offering everything to your spiritual master? As soon as you think something's yours or mine, that means we're keeping it for ourselves. And that means we are in Maya. We are in illusion. If we are offering everything to Guru Maharaj, And through him, everything is ultimately being offered at the lotus feet of Sri Sri Radha Shyam Sundar. Then we can claim no proprietorship and have no attachment for anything of this world, save and accept service. A devotee's only attachment is to service, whether he is disciple or whether he is a disciple engaging in the service of guru, or whether one is disciple engaging in service of pujari or book distributor or preacher. We must know that we are simply representatives and we have no claim to proprietorship over anything. Even the knowledge we are speaking is not our property. We are simply delivering it. Sometimes devotees, with a desire for false prestige, they want to speak something that nobody ever heard before, thinking that this is something very unique that I have that others do not know about. And even hide transcendental knowledge from others so that they can only hear it from me. But actually, this is another illusion and impediment, because it's not yours. All your knowledge, it is Krishna's knowledge. And we only have a right to hear it submissively and on the order of our spiritual master to distribute it humbly to others. And one who repeats transcendental knowledge in that spirit can actually be empowered. We should never claim proprietorship over anything or anyone. The temple president should not think these are my devotees. The guru should not think these are my devotees. The counselor should never think these are my devotees. Nothing is mine. Everything belongs to Krishna. Everything belongs to our Guru Maharaj. And this is the real spirit of detachment. We are attached to the service. We are attached to what we are giving them. But we are not attached to any selfish proprietorship. Because if you become attached to any of even transcendental paraphernalia, if we become attached to it for ourselves, to that extent we cannot be attached to Krishna. And the goal of life is to become attached to Krishna and to be attached to his devotees in a mood of service, to be attached to his holy name. Hare Krishna,
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
So we find here that Vaishnava etiquette is not simply something very superficial and external. Vaishnava etiquette is not simply a matter of offering a person a seat, but it is also a very internalized meditation on how we approach Krishna and the Vaishnavas and how we approach our own service. We cannot ever neglect the external principles of Vaishnava etiquette, but we must also understand the consciousness in which they are performed. And when that proper etiquette is being followed, then such a miraculous, wonderful descent of Krishna takes place. So here, Srila Vedavyasa is explaining how Shonaka Rishi
in such a very cultured, sensitive, and humble manner is praising Suta Goswami. And how is he praising him? O Suta Goswami, you are the most fortunate and respected of all those who can speak and recite. Please relate the pious message of Srimad Bhagavatam, which was spoken by the great and powerful sage Shukadev Goswami. First, he is honoring Suta Goswami for his good fortune and his empowered respectability, and then he is begging him to kindly speak the Srimad Bhagavatam. Shaunaka Rishi, who was the elder and learned leader of all the rishis, engaged in that prolonged sacrificial ceremony, congratulated Suta Goswami as follows. And of course, here Srila Prabhupada puts great emphasis on the principle of humility in regard to the speaker. Prabhupada says, Suta Goswami, when he expressed his desire to present Srimad Bhagavatam exactly as he heard it from Shukadev Goswami and also realized it personally, personal realization does not mean that one should, out of vanity, attempt to show one's own learning by trying to surpass the previous acharya. He must have full confidence in the previous acharya, and at the same time, he must realize the subject matter so nicely that he can present the matter for the particular circumstances in a suitable manner. The original purpose of the text must be maintained. Is there any questions?
Maharaj, sometimes when we are listening to Srimad Bhagavatam to the speaker tries to give elaborate descriptions on the purport, and he tries to bring in his own examples and his own experiences. Sometimes the experiences and examples that are quoted by the speaker are not spoken in a very nice way. Sometimes it might be a little derogatory to the, especially in one particular context. So then what should be the consciousness of the listener? Because it states here that one should be very humble while listening to the Srimad Bhagavatam that is spoken.
Most important is the examples given are in the spirit of giving a deeper understanding of the subject at hand. It does not obscure that message, nor does it divert one's attention away from that message. Srila Prabhupada explains here that the subject matter should be spoken so nicely that he can present the matter for the particular circumstances in a suitable manner. So that is what is most important. Is according to time, place, and circumstance, Srila Prabhupada explained, we should speak according to our realizations. If we speak a particular experience or use a particular analogy, and it truly does give the hearers a practical, deeper understanding of the message, then it is to be accepted and it is to be appreciated. that is relatively subjective. We should not speak anything offensive. If a person is giving his own concocted ideas, then that should not be tolerated.
Maharaj, and what about being engaged in some other devotional activity while listening to Srimad Bhagavatam? Or how should the listener be? For example, making garlands or cutting vegetables, writing the Maha Mantra, making embroidery. Are these all bona fide?
Not writing Maha Mantra, but all other activities are proper. Writing Maha Mantra, what is the use of writing if your mind is not completely engrossed in that activity? But as far as making garlands, or cutting vegetables, or making embroidery, these activities do not completely absorb one's consciousness. They are basically very simple physical activities. And for many people, they can hear Srimad Bhagavatam far better if they are doing these things. It is better to hear in that way than to be falling asleep or to be leaning against walls with your mind wandering. It is certainly proper.
In a humble and a sincere effort of speaking, some devotee in that sincere effort makes some little mistake in the philosophy, while the listeners are devotees. So is it offensive if some of the devotee, you know, tries to correct him for the benefit of all others?
It depends on the circumstance. If it is a serious deviation, then for the sake of those others who are attending, we can challenge or correct or inquire deeper into that particular deviation. If it is a slight deviation, then it is better that we perhaps may ask question at the end to clarify it, or speak to that person after, to try to give him a higher understanding. But how we go about it is also a matter of Vaishnava etiquette. If you are in a superior position to that person, then you certainly have every right to correct him. If that person is in a superior position to you, you have to approach with great humility as an act of service, or consult with a devotee who is in a superior position to him to discuss the matter with him. But we must also be very careful to know that what you may think is a deviation may not be a deviation. He may have a higher realization and a higher understanding that you are acquainted with. And it may appear to be a deviation to you, but actually it's perfectly authorized according to higher principles. For instance, Srila Prabhupada may have explained something in a certain way. But oftentimes there's more than one way to explain something. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur may have explained the same thing in the same spirit, in a different way. There's no contradiction. But for your small mind, it may appear that there's a contradiction. You may not be acquainted with Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary. So if you challenge and say, this is wrong, this is the way Prabhupada said it, then you are wrong. So what may appear to be a deviation may not at all be a deviation. It may just be our limited perception. So we have to be very careful. Most important thing is that the Siddhanta is correct. The conclusion is correct. And if a superior person with a higher realm of knowledge is speaking than you, and you hear something that may appear different, better to inquire submissively of what it means and what is its origin than to declare it to be a deviation. Because in this way, many aparadhas can be committed. So we have to be very careful, especially when they're aparadhas to very senior Vaishnavas. Some of Srila Prabhupada's godbrothers, they have the same message and same siddhanta, but they present things in a different way. We may be accepting everything as Prabhupada has given it. That may be our chastity and our faithfulness to our acharya. But if someone is speaking different, we should not criticize. We should not belittle. We should not think that he is wrong. We should have all respect. We continue hearing according to the way Guru Maharaj has given. Srila Prabhupada presented things in a certain way, and he wanted us to understand and remain faithful to the way he is teaching. We don't have to go looking for all other ways to fascinate our curiosity. We should be satisfied and continue on. But at the same time, he very carefully warned us, do not commit offenses to my god brothers.
We preach, of course, this is not related to Bhagavatam class. But when we see a person is helpless, materially is suffering, now we philosophically say how Krishna is perfect. Now we have not realized that, how we would have reacted. But how do we really preach when we have not realized it to that person that he should take shelter of the holy name, or how Krishna is kind and he is perfect, when we have not realized perfection in everything what Krishna does? How do we preach?
First of all, the predicament that you're in should impel you to work so much harder to follow the principles of bhakti so that you can realize it. Not only for yourself, but so that you can do such greater service to others. Sometimes, due to the influence of material energy, we just begin to feel Krishna consciousness is so difficult to follow the way it should be. And I don't really mind if I take another birth. It's not so bad. I don't really mind so much if I have to suffer. That may be. But what about all the other people who are suffering? To the degree you have realization, to the degree you are purified, you can help them. It's actually cruelty toward all living beings to be lethargic or inattentive in the execution of your Krishna consciousness. And you know that Krishna is the only person's relief, but you don't have the realization to tell it properly. It should impel you that I have to become serious so that I can help these people. That's first. Second of all is, if you are, with humility, repeating the words of the previous acharyas, their realizations will help that person to understand Krishna consciousness, even if you have very little yourself. The postman delivers the message. To the degree you have realization, that will give more potency to what you say and be more convincing. There is no doubt. But even if you have the one realization of faith in the previous acharyas, if you deliver that message with that faith, then you will give them their realizations. If you give someone Srila Prabhupada's books, you are giving them Srila Prabhupada's realizations. There is no doubt, to the degree you have realization, you can convince that person to take the book seriously. But what you're giving them is perfect. And if you repeat the words of the previous acharyas, even without much realization, if you do it with faith in those words, it can change a person's life. So therefore, on whatever level of Krishna conscious realization we're on, we must preach. We must preach by simply delivering them the words of Krishna. But at the same time, strive to become more and more and more pure so that we can serve those words in a higher and more beneficial manner. Do you understand?